Just because I have 20 minutes doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to use it all. I love you too, Chris. Patrick has been encouraging me to respond to issues and items that he's brought up. And lucky for him, my prepared remarks for this section have to do with Sodom and Gomorrah and Leviticus, and so he will get the answer to his question forthwith. I want to start, however, with Sodom and Gomorrah. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah, as told in Genesis 19, is also often used to condemn homosexuality because it said that all the men of the town demanded to have sexual access to the angelic messengers staying in Lot's house. The angels have been sent by God to see just how wicked the towns have become because a great outcry against them has gone up to God. When the angels arrive, Lot offers them hospitality. But the rest of the townsmen are uneasy and demand that they be given access to the guests. Lot encourages them not to do anything wicked, and the men of the town respond by reminding Lot that he's an outsider himself, new to Sodom, and that he has no right to play judge over them. They press close to the house, intending to harm Lot, but the angels drag him back inside the house and strike the men outside with a blinding confusion. Again, I would contend that this story has nothing to do with sex as a way of being intimate. It is about sex as a weapon of degradation. It's about rape as a way of putting people, including other men, in a position of powerlessness and submission. The gang rape of women is not about sexuality. It's about domination and violence. And the proposed gang rape of these angels is exactly the same. More importantly, this proposed gang rape is really a symptom of what's wrong in Sodom, and it is not the only thing that is wrong. Ezekiel 16, 49, and 50 tells us clearly what was wrong in Sodom. This is the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, excess of food, and prosperous ease, but did not aid the poor and the needy. They were haughty and did abominable things before me. Therefore, I removed them when I saw it. The whole town had been infected with an attitude of arrogant, self-centered, conceited, overconfident pride that caused the people to behave in ways that God found unacceptable, including but not limited to the proposed gang rape of the two visitors that Lot had given hospitality to. In fact, the word used here for detestable or abominable, as we've seen it appear up here already, is the Hebrew word to'evah. And it refers to something taboo or ritually unclean rather than to an action that is specifically against God's law. That is, to'evah is never used in the context where someone deliberately breaks God's law, but it is used to describe things that are ritually unclean or are taboo. The sin of Sodom is that instead of looking to God for her moral compass, she's chosen to do what puffs her up in her own eyes, even when it means allowing the suffering of others. Things and behaviors that can be labeled as to'evah, things and behaviors can be labeled as to'evah for a couple of different reasons, but it never refers to the breaking of God's law by God's people. Whoops, I repeated the sentence. The meaning of to'evah as it applies here is this. Something is to'evah if it mimics the behavior of Israelite Gentile neighbors. It is the same word used in Leviticus 18:22 and Leviticus 20:13. So, Patrick, here you go. We're going to look at that next. According to the study notes in the Oxford Annotated Bible, the book of Leviticus contains six distinct parts. Laws dealing with sacrifice, the consecration of priests to their office, laws setting forth the distinction between clean and unclean, for instance, thou shalt not eat shrimp, thou shalt not wear clothes made of two kinds of cloth, etc. The ceremony for the annual Day of Atonement was to govern Israel's life as a holy people, and finally an appendix of religious vows. Leviticus 18:22 and 20:13 fall into the section that describes laws governing Israel's life as a holy people. All the writings seem to have been compiled by members of the priestly tribe of Levi, hence the name of the book, Leviticus. The Levites, the tribe of Levi, were called to be priests and ministers to God's people. The book is designed to help the Jews understand themselves as a people called to be holy, to be separate, to be distinct from their neighbors. In these texts, God tells them not to be like the people back in Egypt, nor to be like their neighbors in the Promised Land. Their worship is to be different. Their laws are to be different. They are to be different. In Leviticus chapters 17 through 26, there are lists and lists and lists of things that the Israelites are not to do because they are part of the practices of the people from whom they are to be separate. The two admonitions for men not to lie with other men as they would with women are both in that section. The Israelites are also told, among other things, not to have sex with animals, not to offer their children as sacrifices to the god Molech, not to practice witchcraft, not to tattoo themselves, not to be unfair in the marketplace or to trim their beards. The codes handed down by the priests were meant to maintain visual and behavioral customs so that the Israelites would be constantly reminded of their distinct identity as the people of the one true God. They were not to participate in the cultural and religious practices of their neighbors. They were to look different, act different, be different. Because the rule about not lying with a man as with a woman is included in the section of Leviticus dedicated to this topic, we can be sure that these two verses are not, again, about expressing romantic love and probably aren't even about having a casual one-night stand, but had something to do with the religious practices of their neighbors. Tattoos, trimmed beards, child sacrifice, divinations, bestiality, and many other things seem to have been part of the spiritual practices of people who had gone after idols, false gods, and practiced superstitious practices. Christians know from writings in the New Testament that we are to be in but not of the world. We live here. We must interact with people around us, but we are told to hold different values. We are still to be the people who hold out God as the moral true north. Relationship with God is the way that leads to wholeness, peace, salvation, heaven, and right relationships with neighbors through justice, mercy, forgiveness, and prayer are signs of our devotion to God. As Patrick has said, we must do what we're called to do as well as believe in God. It may be that the Israelites had it right to be holy in a million little ways, or I guess specifically 613 some little ways, helps you always remember to be holy in the big ways that count the most. Still, we run the risk of falling back into the trap Paul warns us about when we do that. To be holy, we must let God keep our hearts clean, even if we have tattoos on our bodies. We must let God give us a willingness to keep covenantal promises no matter who we lie down with. We must care for our children as precious gifts from God and not use them as sacrifices to barter for blessings. We must pray and develop the ability to connect with the heart and voice of God rather than follow superstitions. To be in but not of the world is hard work, but it is the call that God's people have always had. God's promise to the Hebrews and to the Gentiles brought into the covenant through Christ is that the world will be transformed by the light shining forth for God. The darkness did not, will not, has not overcome it. Further, God's promise is that we can be transformed by the renewal of our minds, and that we must resist conformity to the world's values. I wonder, however, if the world isn't leading the way by welcoming the outcast and opening doors of welcome where others threaten harm. Yes, God dislikes bestiality. Is that as clear as I can say it for you?